Welcome back to Spanning the State. I am Kristen Bry, and when were you here last, Ike?
January?
Was it January? I couldn't remember if it was December? The end of last year or beginning of this year. But Ike Winter is a wood artist based in Milwaukee. We've had him on before to talk about his Milwaukee Bucks pieces, your big Crayola box that made national news. But when you were here last, I think I asked something along the lines of, like, so what's next? And you had a twinkle in your eye, but you teased us. You're like, I can't talk about it yet.
Yeah.
Fast forward to last week, and you could talk about it.
Now we can talk about
it. So tell the people what's premiering.
I mean, so the NFL did hit me up the end of last year to do a project together, and by the whole creative conversation, we figured out that I was going to do all 32 teams out of my style of art. So they're all this big. They're like 3 foot by 3 foot.
So they're big. So if you want to text WATCH to 855-616-1620, which is the Sighting Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line, 855-616-1620, text WATCH, because we're going to get an image of, you brought in the Green Bay Packer one.
Yep.
So you can kind of get a idea of how big these things are, and there's 32 of them.
Correct. They're all going to hang in the player walkway. So as somebody gets drafted, they're going to walk down the hallway to the stage, to their team, and all these pieces are going to be hanging by division. I've seen a couple renderings of it, but it's going to be wild. Yeah.
So one of the big things about your work is that you don't stain wood, you don't buy wood. Everything you use is wood that you find either dumpster diving or on the side of the road. So when the NFL contacted you, how much of the wood did you already have, and it was already stuff that you knew you could use, versus having to kind of find the right piece for all of the different logos?
Yeah, I spent about 3 weeks straight just finding wood, not cutting at all. It was while we were in negotiations of the contract and figure out how each of these teams' logos would look in a wood format. And they had to kind of create those renderings of the colors. And while they were doing that, I just collected, it was like 50 pieces of furniture. I just did not want to run out of wood during this project. Once I started, I just wanted to build. So yeah, I collected like 50, 60. It was all dressers and entertainment centers that this whole project was built out of, pretty much.
Is there anything that has color? So we're looking at the Green Bay one right now, and it's obviously the Green Bay logo, but it is like a darker brown and a lighter brown, shades of brown. So are they all?
They're all like wood adaptations, like neutral tone adaptations of the logos. None of them are true to the colors.
Okay.
Obviously,
that would have been, that was the thing with your Bucks piece, is that it took years of you having an eye out for those Bucks colors.
Just to find the purple.
Yes, exactly.
And when I told the NFL, I was like, I can do this, but we can't do color.
Okay.
And there's like, honestly, that's kind of cooler.
Yeah.
Like the Raiders is really the only team that is black and white. So our color adaptation actually enhanced the colors. Everything else we like desaturated. But we just turned them all into like a neutral tone format.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Which logo was the hardest to make?
Hardest is a tough word because it was the most enjoyable. But the ones that took the longest were the Jaguars and the Buccaneers and the Browns.
Is it because there's so much detail in them?
Yeah. And the Browns, you wouldn't think. It's just a helmet. But think of all the crossbars in a helmet, like all those little pieces of wood. It took a lot. But yeah, the Jaguars has all the spots and kind of the blends of the colors. And then the Buccaneers is like the skulls, the swords. Those were the three that for sure took the longest.
Okay. What is the press been like for this?
You saw my schedule.
Well, I saw your schedule. So the NFL is working with you on getting press for this. And so what has that been like? And how has it been different than the press? Because you're not a rookie, right? Like you've had some pretty high profile media before.
Not this much at this pace. Yeah. I've done interviews before, like one-off things, but, you know, not like this much. And I don't even want to know what draft week is going to bring.
So that was going to be my next question. So you're obviously going to go up there.
Yeah.
What do you have scheduled, or what does the NFL have you scheduled doing during the draft?
We're pretty much on a day-to-day basis right now. We're doing today a big press tour today. The rest of the week and next week, I'm like gluing up the pieces and finalizing all the colors. And we're not even, we have things that we're scheduling for draft week, but I don't know what I'm doing.
Okay.
I'm assuming I'm going to be busy for 5 days straight.
And so what was the total hours spent on this project?
It was over 600 hours, but it was 500 hours of cutting wood. So the other hundreds of hours were like designing, finding the wood, stuff like that. The time crunch is really what we were pressed up against. So yeah, it was 500 hours in 39 days.
Wow.
So I had 64 days to build every piece, and I said, I don't want to leave it up to chance. I want to crank this out as quick as I can. So it took 39.
Did you have to start over on any of them?
Not start over, but we've had to adapt a couple of colors and change things, because the thing is, all of them have to match each other. So I would build a cool piece, and we're like, hey, the colors look great. But then you build the rest of the division, and you're like, oh, now this isn't saturated enough. Like, for example, the NFC North, I still have to redo the Lions, because the other three teams are so saturated and really standout-ish. The Lions is kind of like dull right now compared to the rest. It looks cool on its own, but when you put it with the other ones, it looks a little dull.
So here's a question for that, because my first part of the question, who gets to keep the logos once the draft is over?
So the NFL owns them.
Okay, so they're going to use, unknown what they're going to do with them. They're not going to give them to like each team, but...
Yeah, nothing is decided. As far as I know, they're going back to the NFL headquarters in New York.
Very cool. Yep. So then for a piece like that, if you have to redo the Lions, does that original one just get scrapped?
I'm like redoing components of it.
Okay.
So every, like you can see, like this is three shades of wood. Some pieces have five or six shades on it. So if they're like, hey, give us another color option of the G, I just replace it.
Okay.
I'm not redoing the whole Lions piece.
Okay, so there's not some Lions fan out there that can be like, hey, sell it on eBay, buy it.
Nope, yeah. There's, I've had to redo like probably six pieces, but different components, just to match it all and make it blend as a collection.
So this is very cool. I'm so happy for you. But there's another big piece of news that you have coming up this weekend that has nothing to do with the NFL.
We decided to cram it all into one month.
Yeah, that was an interesting choice.
I was quiet for a few months and I got bored. And I was like, let's just do everything in April.
So,
MKE Gallery Night. The Iron Horse Hotel is one of the venues. I think it's like 30 venues in the Third Ward host art that night. And the Iron Horse reached out and said, do you want to have a private gallery for a whole month of April in our lobby? And I said, yeah, sure, let's do it. Not knowing that this NFL press stuff was going to get announced this early. Friday night we are opening a gallery at the Iron Horse. So pretty much everything that I've created, the Crayola Crayon Box, the SpongeBob piece, some Lego pieces, just a bunch of my work will be on display at the Iron Horse. And Friday night is like the artist talk and more of the meet and greet. It's from 5 to 9 with an artist talk at 7 p.m.
Okay.
And you're going from what?
That is the plan. I mean, we might have to go to a fish fry ahead of time. I have to talk to my husband.
We'll do both.
Yes, we'll do both.
Yeah.
But yes, so that is the plan. I'm going to be there. Will the Bucks pieces be there? Great. Because we got to see those at the Dallas Live, which was great. Because I had not seen the refrigerator piece in person.
It's interesting. Like that one has slipped under the radar because I made it kind of before everything blew up.
Yeah.
And it's just been sitting in my shop and I never talked about it again. And through Thanalysis Live, we got to bring it to light. That one's kind of bigger. I'm going to see if I can find a cool spot for it at the Iron Horse, but the Bucks piece will for sure be there.
Absolutely.
The purple and green.
All right. So if you can't make it on Friday, the pieces themselves will be there on display for the whole month.
Through the end of April.
Through the end of April. Where can people find all the information on all of this? Both see more pictures of the logos, see more work for you, see more information about Friday night's event.
Yeah. So the Third Ward Gallery Night, I think they have a page. Okay. I would have to double check what the actual URL is. But it's on the Iron Horse's website as well. I mean, I've shown glimpses of...
I know. I feel like your social media is you've kind of been able to see a little bit of it.
I'm still teasing. Again, the announcement came earlier than expected.
Okay.
So I still have yet to announce on my social media that these are going to be in the player walkway. Nobody knows that yet.
Well, I mean, anyone who's listening right now does.
I know, right? it's been in the news, though. So, if you search, like, Winter NFL Draft, every news
outlet... Winter with a Y.
Winter with a Y. If you've... Every news outlet has kind of highlighted different pieces, but there's some pieces that like the Broncos, I don't think has been in any press really. Like I know that the Broncos piece specifically, there's like four or five pieces of the photos that we've been promoting this whole collaboration.
Well, yeah. Very cool. This is such an awesome experience, like opportunity for you. I met you back in, was it 2022?
Yeah, 21 or 20.
21 and
yeah,
22.
In that era.
And just to see how much has happened for you over these last couple of years is very awesome. And I'm so happy to see all of this awesomeness. So thank you so much, Ike, for being here. And I can't wait to hear how the draft was.
Yeah. Are you going to be there as well?
No.
Oh.
I don't know.
We'll get you
there. I have not been assigned anything. So we'll see if I find a way to finagle my way in there.
I appreciate the opportunity to come on here and show this. And yeah, it's going to be a very exciting month here.
Absolutely. All right. Ike Winter, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Spanning the State. I am Kristen Bry. Ike Winter is still, everyone wants to see his art piece, and so he's still in here. But if you did not get a chance to see his Packers G on the YouTube live stream, you can go to his social media page. So if you go to Ike, I-K-E underscore Winter, W-Y-N-T-R, he has a bit of a preview of all of the different, the 32 logos. And I think it's, you can't tell, but like, they're really big. And when I first saw this video, when it got announced, I guess I didn't realize that they're all like 3 feet wide, and some of them are even 3 feet tall, which you forget that that's like basically, for a lot of people, your wingspan, and it's heavy. And so if you want to get a chance of seeing at least a glimpse at what these logos look like, go to Ike underscore Winter, Winter with a Y, at least on Instagram. And then his website is IkeWinter.com. Well, I don't know if he has it on his website yet, but you can see his other artwork. And so it's just so cool to me as far as the creativity that goes into something, especially not being committed to not staining any of the wood and really having to plan it out before you start cutting. Because think about the, what is it? Measure twice, cut once, because you can't, once you cut it, you can't come back from it. And so very cool opportunity for him. Very cool opportunity for all the players to be able to walk in and see these like beautiful pieces of art in the logo of the team that they get drafted to go play for. When we come back, there's more sports talk. This, you'd think we were on ESPN today, but we're going to be talking to Joe Tucker on the other side of ABC News and local headlines. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I am Kristen Bry. So we continue on our, this is probably the most sports we've ever done on a show, right? Yeah. So, but that's okay because I like sports. And it's been 20 years since UWM made their first and only run to the Sweet 16. And so if you were a fan back then, maybe you remember a name, Joe Tucker, who was on that team. Was that, so that was 2003 to 2004, so it would have been 2003, right?
2005 was when we finished up, or 2005 was the Sweet 16 run. I finished in 2006.
You finished, okay.
Yeah,
and our connection is that my brother was, he didn't finish the season with you guys, though. He started the season with you guys, and then he did a semester abroad, right?
Yeah, so I was on the team. That was my redshirt year when Ben was there, so I got a chance to meet and know your brother. He's a great guy for sure.
All right. So for people who maybe have forgotten about what that run was like, can you tell us more about like who the coach was, who had another really good this year, and some of the other players who were on that team?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, long story short, obviously I got a chance to watch Bruce Pearl in the Final Four a couple of days ago, and they weren't able to pull it off, but he was here and he was truly a visionary. And I think he kind of rode a little bit of the wave of what Bo Ryan came in and did. And I think Ben came in under Bo Ryan.
Yeah.
But Bo Ryan kind of started something and kind of started this program going. And then Bruce Pearl was able to come in right after that and kind of build on that and really just lay the foundation and a groundwork, or continue to lay the foundation and groundwork of what Milwaukee could be. He really sold us on a dream of what UWM could be as a basketball, program. And I didn't see it. I tell people a story over and over about, he took us down to the US Cellular Arena and he told us about how we were going to sell this place out. We were playing at the Kolache Center. Kolache Center had a capacity of about 5,000 people.
Yeah.
Team was good at the time. And that was the first team that ever made the tournament in school history. We were getting about 3,500 fans. And he's selling me on how we're going to sell out the Cellular Arena, which is now the Panther Arena. And, two years later, after a ton of hard work and some good hiring and some good recruiting, we were able to sell that place out and make that run in the Sweet 16, which was just really awesome. Obviously, cool times for all parties involved. I say from the administration to the coaches to the cheerleaders to the fans to the players. Everybody was having a good time during that time for sure.
And we're going to get to the new project that you're spearheading. But just quickly, yep. I'm sure you've seen the viral video of Bruce shirtless in the crowd.
Was this this year?
This is this year.
Well, I mean, I know he had some previous shirtless appearances.
And so he seemed like a fun guy to play for.
Yeah, absolutely. People always ask me, you know, how is Bruce Pearl? Like, is that the person he really is behind closed doors? And honestly, like, that's who he is. That's his real personality. None of that is a facade. He was a great coach and really a great guy. Somebody I'm still cool with to this day. So we kept a good relationship. But obviously, when you're in the trenches with someone, you know, and, you know, not only do they sell you some dreams, but those dreams come true. It's just a fun experience. And he's been able to do that at a number of universities. So none of his success surprises me at all.
Absolutely. All right. So Panther Future Fund, what is it? How did you come? Like, why are you spearheading this project?
The Panther Future Fund really kind of fell in my lap. At no time in my life did I ever think I was going to be on the fundraising side. At no time in my life did I ever think I would be dealing with compliance again. You know, I got out of school. I thought my compliance days were done. But I think that with this whole NIL thing that started roughly about 3 years ago, it's just necessary to compete. So it's something that I saw as it was kind of starting. It's something that I saw and I wanted to kind of get out ahead of it. And I wanted to help the school compete. I wanted to help the student athletes. And then in turn, I got to do some help in the community as well.
So basically, you're raising money to be an independent collective to help recruit basically student athletes to come play for the men's basketball team, right?
I think initially when I started, it was for retention.
So okay.
I think at UWM's level, I feel like whatever level conference Milwaukee is, I feel like with the style of play that Coach Lundy plays, it's almost a breeding ground for other schools to nab our players. So that was my initial thought is how do we, when we get Coach Lundy is in the foundational stages of starting his program. He gets a player, he plays really well for him, and then the following year he's gone.
Yeah.
So that was my initial thought of why I started the Panther Future Fund. That was kind of my first, kind of what got the ball rolling. He'll get a player, he'll play really good. Coach Lundy plays a really fun style. Him and his coaching staff do a really good job of developing their talent. They have one good year, and then they're gone, and then you're in your foundational stages, and then you got to start all over the following year. So that was initially my thought of starting this Panther Future Fund.
What has it been like trying to raise money for it?
fundraising is definitely a grind.
It's a humbling experience.
It's definitely a humbling experience. And what I've told people is it's interesting because it's outside my personality. For me, I'm a hard worker. I've always been somebody who was a grinder, just working hard. So for me to go back and say, okay, I need something. And even though I don't need it for my own personal self, is definitely an interesting experience. I had an experience. I was doing some fundraising with my cousin Deontay Tatum, who runs an AAU program. And we were around some people that we've been around for a long time. And we're doing the fundraising. We're doing our pitch. Hey, we came up AAU. We're trying to raise money for these young men. AAU basketball did so much for us. And we give our spiel. And we finish. And one of our friends that we've known for a very long time, an older guy, he's like, guys, that was terrible. That was awful. I'm like, wow. I mean, what you mean it was awful? He's like, well, you guys are asking for yourselves. Like, you're coming from a space where Joa Tucker is asking someone for money. And that's not the case. You're asking for the kids. So you have to, like, step outside of yourself and realize that you don't need help. The kids need help and understand why the kids need help. And I remember I got home that day. I'm like, that's profound. That's serious. So after that happened, I think it was a little easier for me to raise money, but it's still an uncomfortable space for me. Just because it doesn't flow natural for me to call somebody and say, hey, this is what I'm doing. It's going to benefit the school. It's going to benefit the student athletes. It's going to benefit the community. And I'm looking to raise some money because, again, fundraising is not necessarily in my DNA.
So how much, we were talking to Joa Tucker, who is the, I don't know, would you say the founder of the Panther Future Fund? Is that the right title?
I am the founder of the Panther Future Fund for sure.
And so how much have you been able to raise to date?
We try to stay away from the number of what we've raised, but we are working hard every day. We'll say that. We're working hard.
So I guess a better way to put it than getting the numbers out of it, from what you can raise, what you will raise, what you hope to raise, mm-hmm. what is the impact? Because some of the numbers that have been thrown out there are insane, right?
Yeah,
I think any of us who have ever loved college sports are kind of like, this feels a little gross when you hear numbers like $20 million.
Absolutely.
And I know that we're not talking about that kind of money
for sure,
but when you think about it, how smaller programs can compete, what impact does the money that you are raising, like, is it how many, I don't know, whatever way you want to frame that, is it per athlete, per like getting them to stay? How do you measure the impact that you're having?
I definitely think, like, when I started, one of the things I wanted to do is I wanted to have it as a tool in Coach Lundy's and his coaching staff's tool belt. I don't think in today's landscape in college basketball, if you don't have some type of collective or some type of NIL working at your school, I don't even think you get in some people's houses. Like, I don't even think you can get a conversation with them. And that's just the honest truth of where college basketball is. If you come in and you say, hey, we got a great program, we got a great coaching staff, we've got great administration, we've got great academics, you have all these things. If NIL doesn't make the list, then people aren't going to take you serious. So that was one of the things that I know that is a huge impact. Just because I had to formulate it and put it together, obviously that's a lot of steps in putting a 501c3 together and doing all those things. So just to have it in his tool belt is a huge deal. So that would be one of the, you know, the huge impacts, I would say, for the university and for the young man and the coaching staff.
So as a former student athlete, I'm sure was broke.
For
I
sure.
can imagine that you were
as all
most,
of us were,
as most
sure.
student athletes up until 2021 were.
Yes.
Do you have mixed feelings on where NIL and the portal is? Because I feel like I was not a college athlete, and there's a part of me that I was friends with so many college athletes that I do feel like they deserve to get paid, but this also feels crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so how do you tussle with those kind of like mixed feelings?
I think, like, personally, I think there should be some type of guardrails. But I don't, no one knows what those guardrails are. I think there's a lot of legislation being like going on right now today in court and, you know, in the coming weeks of how do you put guardrails around the situation. And I think it's tough because a lot of times I think they want to put a standard. You know, if someone's working at this radio station, the standard for a radio host is X amount of dollars. Mm-hmm. But when you're in school and doing this, things are regional. It depends on what school you're going to. So there's so many variables that go in. I think one of my concerns is, and one of my biggest concerns is, because I think I'm glad I'm not the one that has to think about what those guardrails are. But I do think for some of these student athletes, I think that you and I both know what it's like to work every day. You know, we know what a salary is like. We know what bills are like. I think for college athletes, student athletes, I think they get into a situation where some of these people are making tons of money. For one, they have no clue what to do with it. You know, I hope they're being advised well. But also, this may be the height of their earning career. And I think this creates a delusion for them that this is what life is. You know, so you play college sports. You're in a situation where you're out of school and you're making a good amount of money. And then if your career doesn't work out, you know, playing in whatever sport you did, now you have to enter the real world and you go from making X amount of dollars for something that you did for free, and then you're working a job and making a quarter of that, an eighth of that, a tenth of that, and I think it alters your reality of, you know, what life is really like. So that would be my concern. But again, I do think there should be some guardrails on it, and it'll be interesting to see what those guardrails are. Obviously, I was a student athlete, so I would never hate on the student athlete earning.
That's what I mean.
For sure.
Yeah. And so
I'm partial, I'll say.
But I think that it's a complex situation. This doesn't feel like this is... It certainly doesn't feel like we figured it out.
No, and I mean, I don't know that we're close to figuring out. I think that people would like to keep, I think we're trending in the right direction, or I think the NCAA is trending in the right direction. But obviously, once you get into litigation and worried about, you know, cases being brought and class out, you know, all of those things, I think get very complicated. And all those things are over my head. But
you're doing your part.
I'm doing my part. That's
Panther
all.
Future Fund.
Absolutely.
And then also, you're also a serial, your day job is you're an entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
And recently opened the Dream Lounge.
Absolutely.
So tell people where they can find the Dream Lounge.
So Dream Lounge Social is at 1806 North MLK. It's on King Drive, in the historic King Drive. Obviously I got a sports background, so it is a sports-based lounge. Smaller spot, business.
How is that different than a sports bar?
So sports bar is probably going to be a little rowdier. You know, this is a lounge. This is somewhere you can kind of come chill, come have a date. You know, you're welcome to come in, have a date with your husband, have a drink. Obviously not, hopefully not too far from where you guys live, but come in, have a drink, watch a game, kick back, has that, you know, the relaxing feel. We got some kind of lounger type chairs in there, so you can come in and relax and get close with your, you know, significant other if that's what you want to do. But different from a sports lounge, I would say just somewhere you can kind of come chill and watch a game and a little more relaxed feel than going down to Water Street for sure.
All right. Very cool. Joe Tucker, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me.
All right. We'll be back with more after this. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I am Kristen Bry. One final sports story for this sports-heavy Tuesday. Bobby Portis is coming back tonight, which we feel like we're all excited about. And it made me think, so around a year ago, I had the opportunity to sit courtside at the game, which was very cool. And we sat on like the table in between where the team sit. So instead of like there was still a table here in front of us. And so it wasn't where most of the, you know, Gruber and those old folks sit. But what I did not realize, and I learned that night, is that Brooke Lopez and Bobby Portis have a, I guess it's a superstitious, you know what I'm going to say, don't you?
I think so.
So right in front of us, literally on the table that we're sitting on, so it's to the right of the bench, I'm like, what is this? And it's the dinosaur from Toy Story.
Yeah.
And it's like a little, probably 2-inch figurine. What is his name? Rex?
Yes.
Yes. So it's Rex. And we were told by the friend of ours whose seats they were, don't touch the dinosaur. So it turns out, I guess it's Brooke's dinosaur, but Bobby gets in. And so it's like their good luck charm that whenever they're subbing in and out, they touch the dinosaur, but then they also like pour baby powder on their hands.
Yep.
And so I have a video of him. I was like, I'm going to post that back in honor of Bobby coming back today. I'm going to post that after the show today because it was such a random tradition, but it was also adorable to see giant men touch this little tiny dinosaur.
Gigantic B5O men.
Yes. And so very happy to have Bobby back. We missed you, the mayor of Milwaukee, the unofficial mayor of Milwaukee. So hopefully he can give us the boost that we need going into the playoffs. All right. When we come back, we'll say goodbye on Spanning the State. I believe it's time for me to fly. Indeed, indeed. It is time for us to pass the baton to Wisconsin's afternoon news. Brandon's shaking his head. He just wants me to keep doing the show. I'm not going to do that. Why would I steal that opportunity from John and Julia? They probably have such a wonderful, intense, informative show planned. I can't wait to listen on my way home. But we will be back tomorrow. But now, Wisconsin's afternoon news.